To be here. I'm glad you're here. We come once again to share our joy with you, and we're filled with joy. We're filled with love. We're filled with power. You equally are filled with power. You equally are filled with joy, and you equally are filled with love. I'm not used to talking into a microphone. And I walk. Tonight, some of you are new to us, and my name is Jeanerette Jacobs-Johnny, and I'm Kudduk from Northern California. I was born in Hoopa, but I'm from the Salmon River area in Northern California. And this is my friend, and my relative, and my cousin, Irma Marshall, Kudduk and Papago, from Hoopa, California. And this is Elaine St. Martin. I'm proud to be her friend. And she's from Corvallis, Oregon today, but she's from the East Coast. And her tribe is say it.
Tuscarora and Seneca.
Tuscarora and Seneca. And then there's my friend Eric Peterson Kendam. And we're going to share with you a joy, a peace, a healing from one side of our land to the other side of our land. The Creator's land. We'll start, we'll open up and we'll have a song. I think we'll have three songs. One of them is a Shaker song that we do in Shaker Church, Shaker Indian Church. Another one is the healing song. The name of it is Holy Ground. And the third one is
Tell the People I Love Them.
And you're welcome to join in, you're welcome to stand, you're welcome to share, you're welcome to sing. And if we blast the roof off, that's great. But please be a part of us so we can be a part of you.
Thank you. John? John? I invite you to focus in on the light. Close your eyes or keep them open as you choose. Our eyes will adjust to this type of light as time goes on and as we sing this song. It's really a chant. Listen and then join along. Sing another song we sang the other day, Holy Ground. The place where we're standing is holy ground.
Holy ground, we're standing on holy ground, where the Lord is present and where He is. Standing on holy
Tell the people I love them. Tell the people I care. When you feel far away from me, tell the people I'm there. Last night Jesus came to me as he wiped the tears from my eyes. And he said not to worry, he's there by our side. Tell the people I love them. Tell the people I care. When you feel far away from me, tell the people I'm there.
Now what's next on our list? I forgot. Speaking. Oh, okay, that's easy. Last night I mentioned that I fasted on my mountain. I did mention that all the mountains are sacred to all the people from one coast to the other coast. In Canada and Alaska and all over the world, we have fires built, we have candles lit. We have prayers going all the time. You have prayers going all the time. Hopefully, all these prayers will save the world as we know it. I believe that our people hold the world together with these prayers. I have a Supreme Court case coming up in October. We've gone from one lower court to a higher court to a higher court. This is the highest, freedom of religion. People came to this land for freedom of religion. We were here already with our freedom. In this court case, it's called the Orleans Gasquet Road. People normally call it the Go Road. I don't. I call it the Or Road because I don't believe in it. Again, it's money. There's timber there. There's also water. I was talking to someone the other day, and I get real excited when I talk about these problems that are so close to my heart. And as I was talking, I said, and I was actually arguing, and I said, you know, there's only two things that we need to survive in this world. And without these two things, we cannot. One of them is prayers, and the other one is water. We need our mountaintops for prayers. We need our mountaintops for water. When our prayers go up and go out and the Creator hears them, we each are touched. We each are blessed. I don't believe in sin. I don't believe in the negative side. I know that it's there. I know that it exists, but I don't believe in it. I believe in the light. I believe in the power of the Creator. And I believe in the holiness of this land. And I believe in you. And when you go back to wherever you reside, whenever you hear a smoke, or whenever you hear see something on TV. The people say, the Forest Service tells me, that you're going to have to go to Congress in order to make this work. They've been telling me that for 4 years. So I'm telling you, because you are a vote. You have a congressperson that you can talk to, that you can write letters to. Freedom of religion. If someone came into your home, in our homes, we have our cemeteries right beside our homes. They take our bones, our ancient bones, and they want to redeposit them and rebury them because they want to build a new building, a new bridge, whatever it is. It's called progress. I don't believe in progress. I believe in my ancient ones. And they cry out. They don't want to be moved. They don't want their bones to be moved. Eventually, those bones will disintegrate and they'll become the land again. Their spirit isn't there. Their spirit has gone on. We feed our spirits. We talk to our spirits. And we know and we release them. We have to release them. We can't keep them earthbound. My mother left me when I was 4 years old. But you know who was there? The Creator. His voice was loud and strong. Whenever there was a decision to be made, all I had to do was ask. And the voice came and told me. So I've always been guided. I've always heard the voice. I know that the voice is there for you, and I know you can hear it. And injustice cries out all over the land. In the state, this state, I heard this tale. And as I sat in that smokehouse, and several speakers got up and talked about all of the problems, I cried, and I cried, and I cried. Because those aren't new problems. Those are the same problems we have in Oregon and California, in Montana, in Arizona, wherever. This person told me the other day, he said, "How many people do you have on your council?" And I said, 9. He said, "That's too many." And he was very upset, but he wanted to hear how our council ran. And I said, "You know, the council people are there, but it isn't the voice of the people. The voice of the people are different. Up and down my rivers, up and down my mountain areas, I talk to my elders, and they expect me to go out, and they expect me to come here and talk to you. And they'll demand me to tell them every detail, to tell them what you look like, to tell them what you feel like, to tell them how you are, because they want to know. And I will tell them. I'll tell them everything that I've experienced. I'm like a storyteller. I run back and forth. I run to you, and I talk to you. I run to the Forest Service, and I talk to them. And I go back home, and I talk to my people. And then I go to the mountaintops and I get my strength and I get renewed and I get rejuvenated. And then I'm ready to go again. One day I won't be there to go, but my family will take it up. My grandchildren, they're 4 years old, but they know. They know this story and they will tell their grandchildren. Because we believe once our people are totally gone and wiped out, that'll be the end of the world. And it is, you know, it'll be the end of the world for us. I don't know how about the rest of the people. But we must carry on We must be strong, we must unite, and we must not judge. I was talking today to someone, a friend of mine, and we know the problems are in Africa and the problems are all over the world. If we could lay down our judgments and send out the love and understanding and try to understand the problems, that would be helpful. It's easy to judge. I don't drink. I don't smoke. I don't do anything wrong. But I can't judge anyone. I have, in my tribe, many people who don't understand. It's easier to do drugs. It's easier to do alcohol. It's easier to beat your family. It's the easy way out. I can love them. I can do prayers for them. And if they come to me, I can talk to them. I can talk to family members that can talk to them if I can't talk to them directly. When I was a little girl, I had my grandmother. Her name was Mary Johnny. And she was my guide for many years. Even after she passed on, I held on to her because I didn't want to release her. I didn't release my mom, and I didn't release my dad. Eventually, I released them and let them travel to do their thing, wherever they are. Sometimes, I still call on their help and ask for their guidance and ask for their prayers, but I don't demand them to hang around and uplift me. My grandmother never spoke English. We had no car, she didn't drive, and so we took the stages and we traveled and visited. And she must have been a very, very smart woman because she could understand the languages of all the people that we saw. And they'd sit there and they'd visit. And then we'd go to another place and we'd visit. And I was probably 2 and 3 years old and I was an interpreter. My grandmother never raised her voice. She never, and if someone came and if we didn't have very much, she fed them whatever we had of. And she fed it with joy. She'd set the table and we'd sit down and we'd share whatever we had. We moved my grandmother from the center of our mountain, from the center of our... I was 5 years old and I was in first grade and my younger sister was just 3. The 3 of us lived with my grandmother and a couple of aunts. My aunt moved us out to town, which was probably 120 miles away, which isn't far today, but in those days the roads were very narrow. You couldn't get back and forth easily. We went out to school. It was probably September, and September is our Pikiawish time, our world renewal ceremonies. And my grandmother didn't want to leave, and so we left her because we knew we had to go to school. She stayed behind. She cried, but she let us go. And I don't really remember how long it was, 2 or 3 weeks. It was probably just a couple of weeks. And we went down to check on her and see how she was, because she was in her 70s. And she was fine, but she was lonely. And she packed her stuff and she came with us. We didn't have dressers and furniture like today. We had baskets. So we packed her baskets that she had made. And we moved her to town because we had to go to school. She had long hair. And she used to braid it and comb it. And that was her strength. But this was during World War II. And we had to be modern. And one of my aunts cut her hair. We did all these things to try to help her adjust. I'm sorry now. She didn't have to give up her land. She shouldn't have had to give up her hair. But she did it gladly and willingly with love for us. I was 12 years old when my grandmother passed on. And I was with her, and I saw her spirit leave her body. And I knew, I tried to hold her back a little bit, but I knew it was time. It's horrible to be grown up when you're 12 years old. But I did, because my sister was 3 years younger and I had responsibility. But because my grandmother loved us, she stayed around, she hung around. And I knew that we were supposed to have food and feed our spirits, and she taught me how to burn things and do sweats, and she had taught me all that I needed to know for the rest of my life in those 12 years. She had guided me. She taught me how to do baskets. She taught me how to can. I was canning when I was 3 years old. I was cleaning eels and drying a huge smokehouse full of eels and fish, gathering acorns to survive with, gathering the rocks to cook the acorns with. And that was down at the center of my universe, Karimin. You don't know where Karimin is, just in Northern California. That's not important. What is important is that I'm sharing a little bit of my life with you, so that when the congressman is there wondering why we need our mountaintops, they say, only a few people go to the mountaintops. And our answer is, that person says prayers for the whole world. They say, so we'll give you a few acres. We'll cut the trees, right? And we'll give you these few acres. We're invaded at the mountaintops already. We have jets. One of my elders was up on the mountaintop not too long ago. And I love her dearly, and she loves me. And she said, why do those airplanes come so low? She says, I was stooping over, she's old, she's 82. I was stooping over to pick grass for our basket. And she says, I looked up, and there was this big thing right there. And it was so noisy and so loud, she didn't know where to run to. And she didn't want to lose her material she had in her hand, and it was a jet. And of course, they're come in, they're loud, and they're gone. And it scared her to pieces. And she says, why? And I said, when we're up on the mountaintops and we're doing our prayers, those jets come in also. There is no sacred space that's totally, totally the way it used to be. Nothing can be the way it used to be. I fly over the land and I look down. In 1955, I looked down. And the forests were there and they were beautiful. And there was a few spots. I fly over a few days ago. It's not the same place. It's not even cleaned up. They told us they clean it up.
all of those sticks laying down there, those logs, those trees, wasted. They don't let us gather the firewood. It's laying around, but they pile it in great piles and they burn it up. There's enough wood in those piles to heat the homes of all the people without any problem. All we'd have to do is just saw it up and bring it home. So I beg you, when you're looking through the paper, when you have that radio on, when you have that TV on, to look for the little things, because they'll always put it out there. They'll always report it. It'll never be strong. It won't be on the front page, but it'll be there. And I ask the Creator to have your hearts guided to those things so that you could help us in our battles. Thank you.
Am I supposed to say more?
I will continue just a little bit more on what she had to say, and it's to do with, like, our grandmother, when she was 6 years old, she was shipped away to a boarding school. And the boarding school was in Phoenix, Arizona, and she came from Northern California. She had no money, no way to get back home during the summers, and she had to stay. She knew her Indian language, and she was able to hang on to that. And when she finally, she married a Papago Indian in Phoenix. When she had finished school, she had two children, but she was called, she had that calling, desire to go back home, and she finally was able to clean enough houses to earn enough money to go back home, and she did go home. They were very, very poor there, but she got home. And my own mother was kidnapped when she was 6 years old, and she was left on Papago land, and she was sent away to boarding school, and she tells me about how they were so hungry all the time at boarding school. Boarding school in those days are not like people go to boarding schools now. The boarding schools were poor, and the children were hungry a lot. My mother said one time they found their way down into the storage area where they kept the food, and they found some of this grape juice, and they got into it and they drank it, and it tasted pretty good, and they were so hungry. But it made them drunk, and it made them so sick. And it was because they were hungry that they did that. My mother suffered a lot when she was growing up. And she told us those things, but she lost her Indian language. When she was taken away, she knew her baby talk. And so she lost the Indian culture to hand down to us. And so I did not learn how to speak Indian. She married a Karuk Indian later, and he taught us the Indian ways in what he knew, but he didn't know his Indian language either. So we had a hard time, and what she's talking about, not being allowed to this and not being allowed to do that, for the Indian people in Karuk land, they could not go hunting and fishing the way they wanted to. The Forest Service said, no, you can't do it. And so when I was small, that deer meat was our meat. If we didn't have deer meat or fish, we were hungry. And so what Dad used to do is he'd go up on he had this old 30-30 rifle, and he called it meat in the pot. And he would go up the hill, and He would be hunting, and at Forest Service, car would come along up the hill, and he would hear it. So he'd have to hide and wait until it went back. And then if he shot a deer, he'd hear that car start up and come up the hill again. So he'd have to leave his deer there and then come on home and wait till he heard the car go back off the mountain, and then he'd go up there to get his deer. That was our food, and we needed that. And for fishing, it was the same way. He wasn't allowed to fish. And they have the feeling that we take all the fish, that we hog it, and it's not true. When we get the fish, we prepare it for the winter. We can it, we smoke it, and sometimes we've even salted it, but it's our food for the winter. Maybe there are a few that do that now, but a lot of us don't do that. And a lot of times in the newspaper, you hear the bad part of the Indian people, but there's a lot of good Indian people, and there's a lot of good that's being done in our places. It's just that a lot of our, like my mother's, my generation have lost their Indian culture, and they're like lost people, and so they're not being able to raise their children the way they need to raise their children. And I work in the school right now. I am funded by AB 1544 program. My funding comes out of the state of California from Sacramento. And so my job right now, I work with kindergarten through fourth grade, and I'm able to work with about 225 kids in our school. And I prayed about this job because I love those children, and the Lord answered my prayer. So I'm not in one classroom with a teacher working with just one class. I'm able to touch the kindergarten through the fourth grade. And what I do is I go into the classroom, and I'm supposed to work strictly with Indian children, but I cannot do that to the children. I have to work with all of the children because I look at them, and they're all God's children. I can't say, I can't work with you, get away from me. I cannot do that to them. When I go into the classroom, I share with all the children, and my job is to take the Indian culture into the children because we're trying to bring it back now. And we also have a basket weaving class going on at the school. And with my program, this year I started making an Indian dress with the children. And I have another lady who has made her dress already, and so she's guiding us. And the children are very proud of what they are doing. And another thing I do is a lot of the Indian children, there's this new thing that they say they're right brain people and there's left brain people. Some of the Indian children are the right brain, that they're artistic and they have other things that they can learn with their hands and stuff, and they sort of have a hard time learning quickly. And so I go into the classroom and I help them. I have to figure out how I can reach them to put something, click that part in their minds to catch it, to learn, because it's very important for our children to learn. But we also are trying to give them back those values that they lost. It's respect for their elders, and to love. Some of our children are not learning love, and so they don't know how to give it out. And by working there with the children where I'm at, every child that comes to give me a hug, it's like a blessing from the Lord. And so I feel where I'm at, I'm doing a little bit to help our people.
I'm not really sure what to say. I can talk about my mother. My mother was raised in a Bureau of Indian Affairs school. She was not allowed to speak her language. She was taught to be ashamed of being Indian. But we lived on a reservation, and it was her reservation. When I was growing up, I wasn't really allowed to play with the Indian children or be with the Indian people unless I was with my parents. So she was not allowed to speak her language, so I never learned my language. Since I've left home, they have started teaching the language to the small children in the school on the reservation. And they have started teaching a lot of the traditional dancing and crafts to the children and to the people that want to learn. When I go back, I have learned a few things that I did not learn when I was growing up with my parents. I've gone to my cousin that I did not really know, and I've made friends with him since. And he's taught me how to grow the corn, the Indian corn, and he's taught me how to cook the corn and how to make corn soup and cornbread with Indian corn. A lot of things I've learned about my own people since I left home, but I've also learned things from other Indian people around the country. So I don't have my traditional dress with me because I have not made anything yet. And I wear moccasins from the Crow, it's Montana, I can't remember which, it's not really Crow, it's Blackfoot. Because that is one place that I've been, to powwows and to meet with other Indian people. I have a shawl that was given to me from a Choctaw Hopi friend. That was a gift when I left San Francisco to move to Burns, Oregon, where my children's father was born. And things that I've learned how to tan hides from my children's father's people. I've learned how to dig roots and how to survive in that country where they are from, and that's Eastern Oregon. And I can talk about the land that I grew up on. The reservation was given to my people, the Tuscaroras, when they came from North Carolina. Part of it was given to them by the Seneca people. It was a land grant from them. And the rest of their reservation was bought by the people, by my own people. And that's where they lived, and that's where I lived. And part of the land was taken when they put the Niagara Power Project in, and they took it. And it was a very, very hard time for my people. I was only 15 when this happened. And it was only children and women that were out there trying to save the land. My mother would never let me go and be there, but my mother was there. And they would bring in the state police that had machine guns to use on children and women. And I remember riding a school bus to town and sitting there on the bus and crying and seeing that. It was hard because I knew my mother was there. I knew the other people were there. And then I would come home and I'd hear the stories. And I didn't understand. But they did take the land, and they paid the people who they took the land from. But it was a lot of old people that lost their place. And a few of them died because they could not live in the new homes, the new houses. And since I have gone, I have been in places, I guess in San Francisco, when they say that the Indian movement started. And I feel that I was a part of that, but I was not out in front. I'm a person that stands in the background and watches and supports, but there I decided that I needed to be a part of this. I could not wait and stand in the background and not support my own people. I didn't know how. So I went to one of the families. He was a Mohawk. He was one of the leaders that started the Alcatraz movement. I don't know if you know about that. Some of the people that are my age don't probably know. And I went and I offered my friendship to his family because he was in a hospital and he had been hurt. and that's all that I could offer at the time. And I supported these Indian people that were fighting for all of our Indian people, for their recognition of being Indian and for being proud that we're Indian. And for my own children, I gave my children Indian names. There's Hess, he lives with his dad. And there's Nakai and Dilwindo. They all have meanings, but they all have other names. They have names that have been given to them by their clan mothers. The clan mother, the deer clan of my father's tribe. And these are names that they keep with them, that's their names that they don't tell other people. I was also given an Indian name, and I do talk about it once in a while. I tell people what my Indian name is. I've also been given other Indian names by other people of other tribes. I don't speak my language, but I feel that I have an Indian heart. And Indian people, for what I see, are not struggling. They are struggling, but... Oh, this is hard. We're all wanting our own identity. We're learning to be proud to be Indian again, but there are a lot of them out there that aren't. They don't know, and they're still searching. And I think, I guess I can explain, talk about my experience when I moved to Burns, Oregon. And all that I would hear was that Indians were dumb, and all Indians were alcoholics, and that they could never get an education. This was for the Burns people. And when I heard this, I thought about it, and I thought about my children's father. And my children's father had a degree. He had gotten through college, and he was working with his people to help them. And so I talked about this. And then they would talk about Indian people as alcoholics all the time. And I used to feel really ashamed about that. And I couldn't understand. But then I started looking around. And especially in Burns, Indian people were not the only people who were alcoholics. And I would speak up about that. And then I heard about the children and how they were treated in the schools. And so I would go to school with my children when they would start school, because I did not want them to know the prejudice that happens to Indian people, Indian children. I wanted my children to have an education so that they could go out in the world and be able to survive in the world. So I would go to school and I would talk to the teachers and to understand them. And I would go to school and show and talk about the Indian things that I had, Indian artifacts that I have, that have been gifts to me from different Indian people around the country. And I would talk about the foods, and I would tell stories in some of the classes. And this, I feel, helped the Burns people to feel that they could go to school too and see how their children were being treated and educated, and that they could be proud also. I was very much involved with the non-Indian community in Burns with the art programs that they had. Not a lot, because I was more involved with raising my children and hopefully teaching them to be proud that they are Indian and why they should be proud. For myself, I went on to school And I did graduate. And I'm the first generation of my family to graduate from a college and to get a college degree. And I hope that my children will continue doing this. I can't really talk about the land, the Indian land, and what is being done on those lands. Oh. I just heard when I went to Humboldt State in the spring about the Go Road. And there's also, I just remembered, about the Hopi land, the Navajo and Hopi land in Big Mountain, and the struggle that they are having there with their sacred lands and their sacred mountains. And them taking it away, the government taking it, and about the struggle that the spiritual people are having there. This is happening a lot around a lot of the country with Indian people. The spiritual lands are starting to be taken away or interfered with. Thank you.
You've been doing a lot of listening and respectful listening. Thank you. Now it's time to sing again. And as we join in this song, which will be the Shaker tune that we were singing earlier, we would ask that everyone rise and that we form a circle around here, around this altar area and in back, and join hands with one another. Because as you've heard and as we're aware, it's through touching one another, through our solidarity with one another, through our listening and our respecting and understanding and our reaching out in compassion that our unity can empower us to do something, to be the people who God is calling us, each of us, the people Creator is calling us to be in the world. So let's stand up now and join hands and gather around in a circle.